many Americans, April 15th is a day to be weary of. But there are plenty of things farmers and rural residents can do to make tax day a little less scary. Hey everyone, I'm Adam Albrick with Egg Country Farm Credit Services, and welcome back to the Rural Perspectives Podcast. Here to talk tax with us today is Mike Ness, who oversees the tax team here at Egg Country. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
You bet.
We're quickly coming up on the end of the year. What tips do you have for those listening that are looking to affect their 2017 taxes?
Well, farmers have the luxury of having a lot of flexibility in the tax code. So we can look at deferring income or increasing expenses, prepaying some certain input costs and stuff that they have, fertilizer, seed, and so on. Oftentimes what the farmers will do is maybe sell some grain. If the market's right to sell it, they'll sell the grain but defer the grain check into next January, therefore moving that income into the next tax year. That's one way they can defer income into a future year. They also could prepay some farm expenses this year for those input costs and so on, and lower their income that way. The idea being we're trying to kind of level their income, keep them at fairly average over the years, because farming is so up and down as far as profits, depending on prices and input costs, etc. So that's our goal.
So out of all these tips that you've talked about, are there any that are more important to take advantage of, or are they really dependent on the type of operation that farmers are running?
I think it somewhat depends on the operation, the size of the operation, and maybe the amount of equipment they may be purchasing each year. We've got some latitude there. Right now we can expense up to $500,000 of equipment, and also there's still bonus depreciation around for new buildings, shops or cold storage buildings, as well as new equipment. So we have a number of depreciation things we can use. That's probably one of the bigger items that we've used over the years. But we also look at maybe these deferred grain contracts and prepaying farm expenses is something that's done usually on an annual basis. We encourage farmers to tax plan because of this flexibility. So we basically, from November 1st until the end of the year, we're doing tax planning appointments with our customers.
For those that do miss out on some of the advantage of the 2017 tax year, what can be done after January 1 to start out 2018 on a good note?
Well, you have to look at what you've deferred into that year to start with. We do have some things they could do with the grain contracts. If they had pushed some of that grain into January and then we find out that next year maybe wasn't as good a year as we wanted, we could pull that grain back into 2017 and count that as income in 17 if something changed in our 18 plan. So that's one option that could be done, go back and amend that year. I guess the strategies is mainly the average, and we try to keep that income fairly average. Sometimes we may, to take advantage of some credits, we might keep the income fairly low for 3 years and then jump it up in the fourth year, because farmers can income averaging. We can move income back from the current year to the three prior years and take advantage of those other tax brackets. So we also will use the averaging through income averaging to use that leveling of income.
Mike, would you say there is a good time or a preferred time of the year for farmers to really start their tax planning?
Some of the bigger operations will plan maybe right after late summer, before harvest begins, just to kind of see where they're at. In the valley here, we have a lot of sugar beets, and the sugar beet growers, if they're going to defer their sugar beet payments, they have to do that before they lift any beets out of the fields. So in that case, they will come in prior to opening of the beets and decide if they're going to defer some or all of their beets. They can defer all the acres if they want, and that is done by field. So they have, before they can go into that field and start lifting, they have to know whether or not they're going to defer and make that election. So in that case, we'll have a lot of our sugar beet farmers will come in possibly for a September appointment to take a look at that.
As a seasoned tax preparer, I'm sure you've experienced quite a variety of situations. What would you say is the toughest aspect of tax planning for both the planner and the customer?
Our advice, I guess, is sometimes we're trying to make them have be at a tax level that they aren't comfortable with. We look at maybe what they've generated in profits for the last few years, how their balance sheets have changed, and sometimes we might encourage them actually to pay a little more tax than what they think they should be paying. So that maybe makes them a little uncomfortable. And it's a little bit of a selling job. We need to encourage them that we don't want to get too far behind. At the same time, we want to push some of that income forward, the inventory and so on, because it's possible that they may have a very poor year. Prices could drop. They may not get good yields. So therefore, those are the reasons we kind of push that income forward. In case we do have a bad year, we can still level that playing field as far as income.
Is there any one aspect of tax planning that you see customers or producers struggling with a little bit more?
I would say our customers have gotten so used to it because we've been doing it for years and years here, and I think we encourage it. We actually will encourage a young beginning farmer to come in because it's one of the most important appointments they're going to have. So we want to start them early learning the importance of planning. So I guess we haven't had any trouble just because I think we've done it for so many years, and we try and show them the benefits of it, how much they can save. And of course, in the times where I've had some customers that haven't planned and didn't come out so good, I pointed out, you know, this could have been avoided had you come in and had that appointment. So we can do a lot in an hour appointment for them.
Now, there are certainly farm operations that own land in multiple states. Do situations like this complicate the tax process at all?
Oh, definitely. There's some issues, depending on how each state handles it. We work primarily in my area here is North Dakota and Minnesota. You also have other bordering states. Of course, it can be a problem for those bordering states. But the way it generally works, if you have to pay tax in another state, you'll get a credit for tax paid to that state. So a Minnesota farmer that's a resident of Minnesota but farms land in North Dakota will pay tax on all of that income in Minnesota, but then he'll get a credit for the tax paid to North Dakota. The unfair part of that is the North Dakota rate is a lower rate than Minnesota, so actually he's paying a little higher rate than you normally would if you were a North Dakota resident. So things like that we have to watch for. There also can be some issues in the tax law, the way it's accepted by each state. Virtually, North Dakota is the same as the federal code, but Minnesota has a lot of special items that they won't allow us to deduct. For example, the domestic production activity deduction, we call it DPAD, is a fairly substantial deduction. North Dakota allows that, Minnesota doesn't. So it's an add back on the Minnesota return, and that it can amount to a fair amount of tax in addition to what they normally would have. So yes, there are differences like that that we have to watch for, and it makes a prep a little tougher.
So if someone is listening and is considering purchasing land in another state, do you have any tax advice for them to consider before making that final decision?
I guess I've never had anyone ask me that or pose that question to me before they did it. Normally they just came and said they bought some land. It definitely would be a consideration. Generally, if they're buying land, they're buying it where it's proximity to their location, where they're farming and stuff. So, but certainly would be something they could consider, yes.
We're speaking with Mike Ness, Vice President Tax with Ag Country Farm Credit Services. Mike, as we speak, Congress is looking to pass major tax reform, and it hasn't passed quite yet, or at least it hasn't been signed as of this recording by the President. From what you're seeing, what impacts would this have on agriculture?
We've got the bill has been passed both by the House and the Senate. There's a little bit of difference in there. But I would say, as far as the agriculture, one of the things that's going away for sure, the way it looks, is the domestic production activity deduction. And that can also be passed through from co-ops to the farmers, their patrons. And American Crystal Sugar is one, Mindac's another one. So those in the valley here, the DPAD deduction is a fairly substantial deduction. That going away will be a problem. I know that Congress's idea behind getting rid of that was the fact they're lowering the corporate tax rates, and they're also allowing the co-ops the same lower rates. So they were saying that since the co-ops will be paying a lower tax rate, the DPAD will be going away because it was primarily co-ops that were passing that through. So that's one item that definitely will affect agriculture.
And that is the pass-through corporation, correct? That's the reference
right,
there?
Right, yep. That's part of it is the corporate tax rate itself is also dropping to 20%, but they're also allowing the pass-throughs to have a lower rate, yep. So that gets a little confusing because we normally have not had a special rate for pass-throughs like that. So that's something new.
So this would be a major shift, or at least a shift away from what has traditionally been done?
Yes, and that will help the farmers, get us a lower rate on those pass-throughs from S-Corps and partnerships. So that part of it, I think, will be a benefit for agriculture. We might see more pass-through organizations formed or entities formed. So we'll see what happens there. But the corporations, the regular C-Corps we talk about, where they pay their own income tax, they are definitely getting the lower rate, it looks like, at 20%. So some other stuff, the bonus depreciation, they're talking about for a five-year period, I believe it is, going to 100% bonus. So if a farmer was to buy new equipment, or I'm assuming it's also going to apply to new buildings and as shops and cold storage and stuff will also be the same, they can write off 100% of that if they wish. in the year that they build it or purchase it. So, and that's for new equipment or new buildings. Also, they're talking about raising the Section 179 expensing on equipment. And I believe they're talking about that going up to $1 million for 5 years. But that's being discussed still, I think, between what bill will end up passing there. From what we've heard, the Senate version of the bill is probably going to be most likely what it's going to end up at, just from what you read. There'll be a minor adjustment, I guess, in rates. Not that that's going to be a big effect on agriculture. It's obviously going to affect all taxpayers. But we used to have a small 10% bracket and then a 15% bracket before we went to the 25%. And now they're just talking about having the 12% bracket that used to be the old 10 and 15, basically, and then it'll jump to a 22% rate after that. So a little lower rates in the bracket, in those brackets, I guess. So everyone will have a little bit of a savings there. Otherwise, I don't know for sure if there's anything that'll be a major effect on agriculture.
What about Section 199? I heard there could be some changes there. Would this be a potential negative for agriculture?
Yes, and that's the DPAD deduction I was talking about. Section 199 is the domestic production activity deduction, and the loss of that is going to cost some of our farmers a lot of tax annually, because that was a deduction they got passed through or generated on their own. So that is going to be a factor for them. That's a negative. The argument there with the corporate rates being lower and the pass-through rates being lower, they're hoping that will make up for it. And it will for some, but depends on the operation.
Now, we're in a cycle of depressed commodity prices and input costs still seem to remain higher. Land prices have come down a little bit, but rental prices are still pretty strong. There seems to be many aspects out of control of the farmer. But could this tax reform provide a brighter spot in a tougher environment?
I don't know if we'll see a lot of change there. I mean, obviously, they aren't taking away some of the stuff that is, I think, most important to farmers, and that's things like income averaging, being able to do these deferred grain contracts into the next year, or being able to pull them back into the current year if we need to. Commodity credit loans, we can treat those as either income or as loans, so that a farmer in a depressed year where he needs income, he can go out and borrow on the bushels he has in the bin and count that as income, even though he hasn't sold them yet. He hasn't marketed because prices are low. None of that stuff goes away in this bill. So I think what we're seeing on this new bill is mostly changes to brackets, or maybe some changes in credits, expenses. Obviously, with the DPAD, that's a change. We're seeing maybe some larger credits for dependents, that kind of thing. Nothing that's directly related to agriculture, but still affects the farmer's tax return in other ways. But I don't see anything necessarily negative that way, because they aren't taking away some of this other stuff that gives us that flexibility in agricultural tax.
This, of course, is the federal tax system that we're talking about, but of course there are taxes at the state and local levels too. Do federal taxes have the biggest impact on farm operations, or would you say that falls more at a local level?
I would say federal tax definitely has the biggest impact. As far as the two states, obviously Minnesota has a bigger effect on taxes than North Dakota does. Also, what's happened in Minnesota is with equipment expensing. As you're aware, farmers are able to deduct a fair amount of up to a $500,000 of equipment. Well, Minnesota only allows $25,000, so therefore we have an add-back on Minnesota of 80% of that expensing, and then we get to subtract it over the next 5 years. So it takes us longer to write off equipment in Minnesota. So if you have a farmer that writes off a substantial amount of equipment, there's a large Minnesota tax that first year, whereas North Dakota acquiesces to whatever the federal is, so they don't have any change. So Minnesota definitely has more, but the federal is the biggest tax piece.
Do you have any parting advice on any topics that we maybe haven't covered at all?
One thing that might be some planning they could count on for this year, it looks like for sure the state income tax deduction is going to be going away on this new bill. Both the House and the Senate versions have that. So farmers may want to consider doubling up on their state income tax and maybe real estate taxes on their house or second residence. Since we're going to a large standard deduction next year, the way it looks, of $24,000, and not being able to deduct state income taxes, there'll be very few people it'll be itemizing anymore. So therefore, by paying those in this tax year in 2017, they can deduct those on their 2017 return, and then next year they can use a larger standard deduction of $24,000.
Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. Thanks for coming on.
You bet. Glad to be here. Thanks.
That's Mike Ness, VP Tax with Ag Country Farm Credit Services. That's a wrap for this edition of the Rural Perspectives podcast, which is a production of Egg Country Farm Credit Services. To find out more, visit our website at www.eggcountry.com.